We're talking with Dave Politis, author of the new book, Missing 411, The Devil's in the Detail. 1,200 or so cases that he knows of, only a handful of those people who returned alive were able to say anything about it. When we come back, we'll hear the few tantalizing tidbits that they were able to spit out right after this on Coast to Coast AM. David Politis, in all the 1,200 plus cases that you've looked at, is there any case where the survivor comes back and is able to give useful information about where he or she has been, what has happened to him, or is it always people who are somehow unable to express themselves?
Well, there are some pretty wild stories out there, and some of the kids, their stories are completely discounted by some, and law enforcement doesn't take it seriously, but every once in a while, you get some little tidbit of information from a newsman who sits there and listens and thinks it's interesting and writes it down. There have been a couple of stories where the boy says, yeah, I saw a big, throbbing, hairy monster looking at me from behind a tree. That was in the Eastern U.S. book when I wrote it, and that boy was eventually found. Another one out of Northern California where a boy was camping with his family, disappeared near the McLeod River. Eventually, he was located along the same trail that he disappeared on, and he said that he was taken down into a cave, and there were all these robots down in this cave, and that there was a woman that looked just like his grandma. In fact, he thought it was his grandmother to begin with, except there were sparks coming out of its head. And she laid down a piece of paper and said, you have to poo on that. And he said, I don't have to go poo. And she said, you have to go poo on that. And he said, no, I don't. And then she got mad. And then he said, I don't remember how I got out, but all of a sudden, the next thing I know, I'm on this trail again.
You had one case in this book, I think it was a kid in Colorado, and I'm sorry to put you on the spot, but I think he mentioned seeing doggies and kitties. You have those kinds of descriptions from children. They describe other kinds of creatures or people they talk to, or I think there's one case in this book where a little girl says she was joined by another little girl.
True, and that's in fact, that case made some national press. I think it was Nightline or one of those shows interviewed her because years earlier, the girl who she said she was with, the name was just off a little bit, but had died in that environment. And this girl said that this girl kind of showed her the way through and how to make it through safely. Now, there are those that are very strange.
You have any kids who say they talked to whomever they were with or whatever they were with?
You know, that case up in McLeod, Northern California, was one, but it's pretty rare. Like I said, the vast majority of the times, there's no memory. The rare time where there is a memory, people like to discount it. Even though I wouldn't, they do.
It's comparable to missing time cases where people just simply can't remember where they were.
Exactly.
A couple of other unusual type cases I'd like to touch on. You have one, a lady named Letitia Faust, she's 50 years old, Franklin County, Virginia. This case is from 2009, and she was like the doctor who disappeared skiing. She's in the medical industry, a pharmaceutical sales rep. What can you tell us about her?
So she was seeing her mom on the weekend. Her mom needed some things at the store. She drove into the local county area to get some food. Called her mom to ensure she was getting everything right and that she was leaving again. Her mom said, yep, sounds good. There was a freezing rain and some light snow falling at the time. This woman was very, very credible, trustworthy, just everything you'd want in someone. Well, she disappears. She never comes home. And they find her car eventually in an area off of the Blue Ridge Parkway, in a region that she would never have gone and never have been in. And the window of her car is rolled down, and there's snow in the front seat. And the sheriff sends his people out. And this is at the top of a dead-end road on the top of a ridge where there's an abandoned house. And there's a pond on this property. And between the car and the pond, they find one of the shoes that she was wearing. And they search the pond for 3 or 4 days. They don't find her. They search the countryside. They don't find her. Then it starts snowing heavily again, so they pull out. They come back 3 or 4 months later, they search again, and this time they find her body down the hillside from the pond, where they had searched many times before. Now, a couple things about this. They find her car parked on the top of a hill on a road next to an abandoned house. The windows rolled down. Ask yourself, in the middle of winter, sleet, rain, snow, why would your window be down? Only a couple reasons. Because you wanted to see something more clearly, or you wanted to hear something because it should have been emitting sound. There's few reasons why in the middle of winter that window would be rolled down. But it was. Why would her shoe come off between the car and the pond? Now, this case in and of itself may not mean a lot to the vast majority of law enforcement, except there's a case almost identical with facts that happened in New Zealand, May 1st, 2010 at 5:45 in the morning. A 29-year-old girl who loved to go to the mountains left early by herself, got in the car, went to a gas station, was on tape filling her car full of gas. She lived in an area outside of Christchurch in New Zealand. And then she was driving up in her car up a countryside road, and she was near the highest point in this county when, for some reason or another, her car pulls off the shoulder of the road and stops. And the police said it could be described as a very, very, their words, very, very low-speed impact crash with some bushes off the side of the road with no real damage. And they saw the car there. They didn't even know she was missing, but they started looking around when her family said, yeah, we can't find her. So they figure she must be there. So they search around, and initially they don't find anything. Then they bring in a canine, and the canine starts walking down a path, not necessarily finding a scent, but they find both of her shoes on the path, like 30 feet from the car. Further down the path, they find her watch. And I thought that was unusual because her watch could have been an electrical device. I don't know. So this goes on, and they search that whole countryside. They bring in armed forces people to search. They bring in FLIR. Nothing. They cleared the area. 22 months after she disappears, a pig farmer is 100 yards from where her car was initially located and about 328 feet from the car on the hillside, and they find her deceased. I looked everywhere for what they could determine to be the cause of death, and they never released it that I could find. Now, on Letitia Phillips, they couldn't determine the cause of death. Or Letitia Fast, rather. They never could determine what killed her.
You had another sort of strange one a year or so ago. Dr. Talika Patrick, a doctor, physician?
Yeah, and there's a series of physicians that have disappeared in the last year under very, very unusual circumstances that I write about. But Letitia was an unusual person in that she had an infatuation with somebody, and some people could actually claim that maybe she had a mental illness, except that her car pulled off the freeway in a very odd location. She apparently got out of the car, I'm guessing, and over a fence near where this car was at was a small lake. Well, because she was a physician and because she had some notoriety, they brought in the FBI. FBI searches the lake, searches the countryside. They don't find her. 4 months later, a fisherman is at the lake, and they find her body. And I'll quote, "It appears that she drowned," the coroner said. I don't know how you could appear that you drown. You either drown or you don't drown. Either water in the lungs or there isn't, but that was the determination. They couldn't figure out why she was in this area because she isn't even from this area of Indiana where her car pulled off the side of the road.
Do you suppose there is enough evidence to suggest that people, you know, of course, people are taken while they disappear while they're hiking, but this suggests that they're taken while they're driving, that they're snatched out of cars? Is that too far to take it?
Well, apparently the car is on the side of the road or stopped, and they're out of the car because their shoes are off and their watches are found. So Well, voluntary or involuntary, they're coming out of the car. That's for sure. And, you know, the unusual part of this is when we first got into this, there were a couple of cases that floated our way very similar to this out of Minnesota. And we ignored them because we were trying to stay real tight to the profile. But the reality of it is that rural location, bad weather, shoes off, these things start to mount up and you start to say, I better open my eyes because this matches.
I wonder if you opened your eyes further, whether you'd find a lot of cases in urban areas where people just vanish. And the circumstances are harder to isolate because it's not rural, because there are so many people around. They're taken, they're snatched, they're grabbed by somebody or something. But because there are so many people around, it's sidewalks and not snow, you can't track them. Well, there's a whole bunch of people disappearing from urban areas, and we just aren't able to put it all together.
And you've got a good point there, but the problem with that is that there are so many variables to a disappearance in an urban area versus a rural area.
Right. It'd be easier to hide it.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You have some cases that you've come across where people just disappear from airplanes, which, you know, the whole world is still wondering what happened to this Malaysian jetliner. I don't know if your analysis would apply to something that big, an entire plane disappearing, but you do have cases of people disappearing from planes or last seen in planes.
True, and that is going outside the bounds of what we originally said, but even to take it a step further, there was a guy in Finland who contacted me when we first started doing this work. And he started to give me some pretty good information about a lot of different things, his theories and such, just opening your mind up to different ideas. But when my last book came out, he said, Dave, he says, you know about the Bermuda Triangle? I said, yeah. And he says, well, do you know that you have four cases where people have disappeared and weren't found that at the same time an airplane disappeared? The same day an airplane disappeared and was never found in the Bermuda Triangle. And at the beginning, when I first thought of this, I thought, well, maybe, you know, that could be important. But then after you look at the statistical odds of it happening, there's only been 129 planes that have never been found in the Bermuda Triangle. And that's over a 63-year span. That's 22,995 days. And we have about 700 disappearances in those 23,000 days. Yet statistically, it seems unreal that four of those occurred on the same day that one of those 129 planes disappeared.
Wow. Yeah, that seems, I mean, it's only four, but it's four out of a pretty small number. Yeah, that's amazing. What about crashes?
And then you step it one step further and you say, okay, of the disappearances that have happened, and you're thinking about aerial phenomena now, well, we've had several cases, five, where an airplane or a helicopter has crashed working to save the people or look for the people who have disappeared. Now, that's pretty statistically significant, especially when you look at the one that happened in 1945. An Air Force helicopter crashed in the Everglades looking for a lost man named Al Snyder. And then in 1997, a helicopter crashed in Olympic National Park looking for a Rhodes Scholar physicist that disappeared. And then a Cessna 182 crashed in the Colorado Mountains looking for a man who disappeared. And then on the Jared Atadero case, that strange case I told you about, an Air Force helicopter crashed in the Poudre Canyon, killing some of the people on board. And then the last case, probably the weirdest case in the book, is one where a nanotechnology physicist grad student was hiking on a trail in New Mexico. She disappeared. Helicopter went in to rescue her and died. And what I wrote in that article was that girl from Japan, Megumi Yamamoto, was never supposed to get off that mountain. I don't care what anybody says. Everything stacked against her. She was hiking with her boyfriend, who was also a New Mexico student, and she'd never been to the mountains before, and somehow or another they got separated. And he looked all over, he got help. He had like 6-7 people looking for her over the trail. She gets on her phone and calls 911, the thing to do. That 911 phone call gets routed through emergency services and gets routed to a non-emergency line where they cannot triangulate her position. They told her, why did you call the non-emergency line? Call 911. She says, I did. They said, call back on 911. Megumi called back 9 times, and 9 times it was routed back through a non-emergency line where they couldn't track her. The 10th time she calls in, for some reason she got through, and they found her, and they knew where she was at, and they called for search and rescue. Now the weather's turning really bad. It's snowing. Search and rescue people, half of them are saying it's too bad. The weather's too bad to even go rescue her. A few others said, hey, okay, we'll go in, we'll try. So they make their way in, and they found her. They dispatch a New Mexico State helicopter, and originally they couldn't get the approval from the National Forest Service to land a helicopter in a wilderness area to save somebody. They couldn't find somebody to give the approval. And they knew they couldn't land there because it was restricted. Well, so eventually they fly in, and now the snow's really coming down. These two New Mexico State Police officers fly in the helicopter. They get in. They land on a little ledge. She gets into the helicopter. They take off. A wind gust hits the helicopter. It crashes, falls 1,200 feet down into a canyon. She dies, and the pilot dies. One guy lives. They interviewed the sheriff about this phone call issue. He said it's never happened before, and they can't figure out how it happened.
It was like the deck was stacked for her.
Absolutely. And that's one of the 4 physicists I write about in the book that have disappeared or never made it off a mountain alive.
You know, it's scary enough, but the idea of going out into a national forest or national park by yourself after you read these books. But it's not much more comfort to be in homes because, and we're not going to have time to really get into it in detail, but in general, you've got a lot of cases of people just disappear from inside a house.
And originally, again, that's not some of the cases we were looking at, but when you look at the details in them, you can't ignore them. And the one case, probably the most important case in the book to me, happened in 1984 at Hayden Lake, Idaho. Ryan Hoflinger was 2 years old, lived in a house with his parents and his sister. They had a big, bad dog in the backyard, barked at everything. Well, the night before, Ryan broke his crib, and so he had to sleep with his sister in his sister's room, and he was sleeping against the wall. At 5:30 in the morning, the sister wakes up, has to use the bathroom, comes back to bed. Ryan's asleep. She falls asleep. So Ryan would have to crawl over her to get out. She wakes up at 7:30 in the morning. Ryan's not there. She goes into her mom and dad's room and says, hey, is Ryan with you? And they go, what do you mean? So they look around the house. All the doors are closed. Ryan didn't know how to close a door and never would close the door. If he walked out, the door was always open. All the doors in the house were closed. And their mean, bad dog in the backyard, in their words, looked like the dog was drugged and never made a sound.
David, I'm going to have to interrupt you. Sorry to stop you at that point, but we'll pick up this story about Ryan, the missing 2-year-old, right after this break on Coast to Coast AM. When we come back, we'll finish the conversation about this missing boy, and then we'll take our exploration international, because the phenomena, as David has discovered, is all over the world. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. David, let's continue the story about Ryan, the 2-year-old boy missing from Hayden Lake, Idaho.
Yeah, the police showed up right away. He was a small kid. He wasn't very athletic. The parents obviously distraught and majorly concerned because their dog didn't make any sounds. Anybody who opened a door did anything, it'd get an immediate reaction from the dog. Now, the family lived about 1.5 to 2 miles west of Hayden Lake. And that's a lake that's surrounded by homes, beautiful area, mountain setting. The community is less than 5 minutes from deep woods that sit around that area. So as they're searching, one of the searchers, 7 hours after the boy disappeared, found Ryan's body under a boat dock at the lake. There was no bruising on his feet. He didn't have any pajamas on. And he was wearing a diaper. Well, when they asked the family to look at the diaper, they said, that's not the kind of diapers we use. And they thought, well, that's really strange. Then where are the pajamas? They searched the lake for all this evidence, and they could never find anything. Now, what I want people to think about is a couple of important things. First of all, how does a boy like that get out of the house? And is it plausible to believe that somebody went into the house, took him from over his sister, walked out of the house? That's not plausible because they've got a dog, number one. Number two, he's not even in his room. He's in a different room than he normally is in. And then if you were the abductor, you wouldn't dump the body in a lake surrounded by homes. You'd drive a mile or 2 miles outside of their little community, and you got deep woods, you could dump the body there. It doesn't make any sense at all, except that it's water-related again.
And you change the diaper and use a different brand of diaper?
Does that make sense?
Was the dog drugged or something?
So that's a good point. The family was convinced that the dog was drugged. The police actually took a blood sample, gave it to a vet, and the dog was not drugged, but it was acting unusual.
Is there a cause of death for the boy? Do you happen to know?
They said presumptively, possibly drowned, but it wasn't conclusive. Same kind of thing you always get on these cases.
You had this, you mentioned in the book and in previous books, a whole bunch of cases in Colorado, but boys, young boys, there's a bunch of them right in the same general area, right?
Correct. And I call it the Colorado three-boy triangle, and it starts with Jared Atadero, that boy who they found the remains 550 feet above the trail. The second one is Alfred Bielarch, who disappeared in Rocky Mountain National Park. And the third one, and you know, when I had those first two cases, I knew in my heart there was another one. I just had to find it. And if you look at Bielarch disappeared in 1938, Atadero in 99, and right in the middle of that, Chris Vigil in 78. And so you have these 30, 35, sometimes only 20-year differences between the two, but that's just about a revolution of time for an entire sheriff's department or a career of sheriffs to move through the area and forget it. So Atadero and Bielarch, they're about 20 miles apart from each other, and Vigil is the third wing of that, and he was about 20 miles on the eastern end of that triangle. And Chris Vigil, who was 9 years old, went with his family up this Gray Rock Mountain, and it's a big, solid piece of rock. And he was a kid that ran every day and was in great shape, and his family let him get up ahead, and he saw a man. And he and the man spoke a little bit. And the man said, hey, you know, you ought to stay back with us or your family. You shouldn't be running ahead. He goes, ah. And he ran ahead. And the man last heard him at the base of this mountain and making a strange kind of noise that was validated by a couple of girls who also heard the noise, a strange kind of yell that made him so uncomfortable that they got off the mountain. Well, his mom and his brothers and sisters never made it to the top where he made it. They came back to the bottom, and this man met with them and said, I don't know, I never saw your son. He disappeared on the other side of the mountain. They called search and rescue. That night, it started to rain, and then it started to snow so hard that they had 4 feet of snow within days. And there was such a crimp in the search that they really never got a great search off at the beginning or any point in the middle. They had to wait until the snow was gone. The boy was never found. And I actually went up to the top of this place, and it is a heck of a hike, let me tell you. I could see why the mom didn't make it. But once you get to the top, it's one giant piece of granite that's huge that makes this mountain.
You know, we didn't really touch on this earlier, but inclement weather plays a big part in this mystery. And I guess it might be too much for people to believe that that bad weather could pop up. But time after time, case after case, it seems like these people disappear, and then, bam, gigantic storm hits that would impede any kind of a search.
And, you know, in the book, in this new book, I do write a little bit about weather and weather manipulation. And if people don't know, we've been manipulating weather for decades through cloud seeding. But even now, weather manipulation has gotten much more advanced. And to think that even we as a government can't manipulate weather, there's something in the United Nations code that says that you can't use weather as an offensive tactic in war. So yeah. Countries do have the ability to control weather. Now, I'm not saying that obviously we're planning bad weather with this, but obviously weather can be manipulated.
Let's expand it a little bit. In your earlier books, Hawaii was, I think it was the only state where you had no cases. And I don't, although you don't have any specific cases in this book, you do have information that you got from Hawaii. Share that, because it sort of expands the topic to include lore, mythology, things that we would put as fairy stories or things of that sort. I mean, that for centuries, people have believed that there are creatures in the forest, give it whatever name you want to give it, but parents have warned their kids that X, Y, or Z would get you. There are legends and stories and myths, and that's included in Hawaii.
Yeah, and that was a great story. A friend of mine went there, and they went on a van trip with a group, and this one older Hawaiian gentleman had some great stories about Hawaiian legend, and she said, "Dave, you got to talk to this person about missing people." So next time I went out there, we sat down, and he told us that there actually was history behind Hawaii and Hawaiian warriors that lived in the mountains, and during certain phases of the moon, they would come down to the beaches with their fire in their hand, and they would make it down the valleys. And if you looked up at them while you were on the beach, then you would disappear and you would come back dead on the beach. And the way you got around that is you laid on the beach and you hid your face and you laid straight down. And he actually said that this has been going on, and there have been missing people like this over the years in Hawaii. And at certain times of the year, you can actually see them holding fire as they come down the mountain. And it's warriors that have lost face in battle that are kind of in this area of the world where you're not really here and you're not really there, and you have to come out at times. And he says there's a lot of them that live up there.
And they have stories about little people. I mean, there are stories about little people everywhere, aren't there?
Everywhere. In fact, Crater of the Moon National Monument, where these two older women disappeared, there's Native American stories that I wrote about that there are little people there.
Let's expand it and include some international cases. You had a really interesting one in this new book about a couple in Canada, British Columbia. A man and a woman, I guess, are hikers, pretty good shape, and they disappear.
This is another case where the woman was in her last year of medical school, and the guy, her boyfriend, was an attaché, a governmental attaché for Quebec, and they had been together for a couple years, and they decided that they wanted to go backpacking, and they went hiking all the time, and this was nothing new, and they did their research, they got a book, and they had all the equipment, and they were going to a remote area. And it was near Pemberton, B.C. And this is one of those cases where the mother of the girl contacted me and said, you know, can you look into this and tell me what you think? Well, I actually contacted the RCMP sergeant that was investigating the case to get some clarity on it. The area that these two went into was really, really someplace that most people don't go to. And he said that the weekend that they went in there, there was nobody else there. And they had backpacks, sleeping bags, they had helmets. They were prepared for everything. And they brought the canines to the car that they found at the head of this trail. and the canines found no scent. They found nothing. And they searched for 2 weeks and one incident. They came back a second time and searched more. And they not only didn't find any of the equipment, they couldn't find any evidence that those two were anywhere in the area. And the RCMP sergeant said it was super strange because they should have found something.
Jumping to the other part of the globe, Australia, bunch of cases from Australia. You've got in chapter 3, talking about Australia, a list of cases. There must be 15 of them in New South Wales. The one that jumped out at me was a boy, 4 years old, named Shields, M.I. Shields. And what is striking is it's a perfect example of how far a kid can travel, way beyond what should be normal. Do you remember the details on that one?
Well, there's a few in Australia that, and I've told people this just recently, that they mimic U.S. cases in a very, very weird kind of way, in that a lot of the things that are in our profile here, that they fit exactly into that Australian profile. Now, the Shields case occurred in a place called Mosgiel, and it's a tiny town about 420 air miles outside of Sydney, and very near Wollondra National Park. And this, in the older cases, this happened in 1931. In the older cases, the news never put the first name of a child. They always said just son of Shields or whatever. And yeah, it was a sheep farming area, very, very remote. And the boy was playing outside his house and just disappeared. And they started searching, and they called in other ranches and things in the area, and they started to look. And initially, they thought the boy was dead right from the beginning because it was such a treacherous area. But allegedly, this boy walked for 5 days through the bush and was found on an afternoon near a city called Hilston, 45 miles from his home. Believable?
That's a long way to go.
I don't even know if I could do that, George.
You know, I don't want to leave Australia or foreign, but I remember it just reminded me of a case that's earlier in the book. And I think you had said that this boy has been out there for 11 days with no food or water and was not only alive, but in pretty good shape. That makes no sense.
It
11
doesn't.
Days?
No. And again, there's a lot of those. And there's no really, really way to explain it, and you can't analyze it and say, well, was it pure luck? No. How can it be? It's like those people that are found in an area that's previously searched. Were they really on that trail for 11 days? That's what I want to know.
You had a case from Switzerland, and I want to talk about that a little bit because this is relatively recent. It's 09. Where this really big guy, 6 foot 5 inch guy named Jonathan Miles Robinson, vanished. Tell me about that one.
This one is the biggest whodunit maybe in the book. Just graduated from college. He was from the UK. Same as a case. There's a lot of similarities in this case with a case in Australia with a guy named Gary Tweedle. But in this case, every year, Miles's family took everybody in their family to the Swiss Alps, to a place called Lingen, and they stayed at the Eiger Hotel underneath the Eiger Mountain. And there was a big group there that always just kind of walked around the community. There's no cars in the city. It's all walking. You take a cog train to the city, and after midnight, there's no transportation in and out. You're there. Well, that night, he and his family were all drinking, shooting pool. No big deal. They had a lot of family friends. He walked a family friend, a female, back to her room just down the street from his hotel. At 2:10 a.m., he walked her into the room. At 2:45, he's on film leaving the room. He's never seen again. Massive search. Well, his mom, Miles' mom, was an executive inside of the Swiss ski team and had some political clout, and got a lot more searching done than most of us probably would have. And in fact, the family got together and they asked every resident inside of Wengen if they could search their home, and they got the approval because they didn't. They believed that Miles had to be somewhere in that town because there's no way he's getting out of there. Now, you fast forward, they bring in some professional searchers from France. And 7 days after he disappears, his body is found on a cliff in a city called Lauterbrunnen. There's no way to get from Wengen to Lauterbrunnen at 2:30 in the morning in the middle of winter. It's impossible. And his BlackBerry cell phone had made a call at 3:26 a.m. on December 22nd, the morning that he disappeared, about an hour after he was last seen. And I've had this happen before to victims. When the cell phone reacts like that, it's reacting to a violent hit. Sometimes when you drop a phone really hard, it'll call its own phone directory. Well, that's what happened, apparently, on the 22nd at 3:26 a.m., meaning he somehow ended up in that position an hour after he disappeared. Now, the COG train stops at midnight. There was never anything in any article that raised the suspicion of how he got here other than the COG train stopped at midnight. The coroner stated that he was found missing his shoes and socks.
Huh. There's no way he walked it that far.
No way. Middle of winter. And then there was some question about, well, maybe he was jumped and drugged. He was 6'5". He was probably the biggest guy in Switzerland at the time.
Wow, that's a strange one. But you said it is similar to this guy Tweddle or Tweedle?
There's a lot of similarities. Both of them disappeared late at night, early in the morning. Both had been out with friends, drinking, having fun. But the differences are, well, and they're both from the UK. They're both the same age, even. Both were super smart. Both were found dead on cliffs. Both of their deaths were unexplained. Tweedle, there's actually a man that lives very near the Fairmont Resort in the New South Wales area that's a friend of mine on Facebook, and he helped me get a lot of the information on Tweedle. Now, what's the strangest thing about the Tweedle case is he disappeared July 16th, 2013, and do you know they still haven't released the cause of death of him?
You have no idea what the cause of death for Robinson was, the guy in Switzerland?
No, the coroner said that they were still awaiting chemical analysis.
Wow. We will continue our conversation with Dave Politis. It's getting pretty weird here, and we'll open up the phone lines with your questions about Missing 411, The Devil's in the Detail, the new book.